Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Kino Tri Show. Whether it's ratchet or inspirational, dope or disturbing, let's talk about it. You never know who'll stop through. This dude's worldwide. So kick your feet up, relax, and let the libations flow. It's the Kino Tri Show. All the cool kids are listening. Don't be a Stanley.
Yes, what's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Kino Tri Show. It is Tuesday, December 14th, I think. It's December 14th?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the building with my partner in crime, Jamil Harley,
what up,
a.k.a. Young Beige.
What up, though?
A.k.a. Young Discipline X Malcolm. I don't know. I'm just making up stuff.
I like that.
But anyway, we got a special guest in the building.
AKA,
we got
A.k.a. the Yellow Fist.
The Yellow Fist. We got Ransom Rockwood in the house, man.
What's going on?
From D.C.
It's going, man.
Oh, okay. So what brings you to Atlanta?
I'm down here, you know, visiting my girl and...
See how I set him up early.
trying to enjoy the site. Get some photography in.
Oh, yeah. What would you taking pictures of? What would you be?
I take pictures of anything, so anybody want to book me, you know.
Oh, yeah. We'll
put that information.
Yeah, we'll put that out at the end.
But, I'm probably going to be, you know, doing some promo shots for Mia.
Okay. So. Okay. I just want to say, in case there's people dialed into the show listening for Vanessa Fraction, we had to cancel her tonight. She's a little under the weather, so we'll have her back real quick, man. Y'all, Vanessa, get better, man. You're going to come back on. She's going to come back on probably at the end of the week or next week. She just had a little cough. You know, we didn't want to have her out here all sick and stuff. So, shout out to her listeners. But anyway, back to Ransom. Are you a football fan, man?
It's hard being a football fan when you are a Cowboys fan.
Enough said.
Last time you was a fan was in the 90s, man.
I've been a fan since Aikman got drafted. And,
okay.
You know, so I've been through the 1-15 seasons, you know, the 4 concussions in one season. I've been through the championships and then the very slow and elongated downward slide.
Troy Aikman is not walking back through them doors.
Nah.
Did you see a beer commercial Troy Aikman's
in? I haven't seen that.
That's the only time I was like, oh, look at old Troy. Because I grew up a Buffalo Bills and Colts fan.
So. Okay, so we killed your dreams year after year.
Oh, Buffalo Bills went 4 Super Bowls in a row.
They went 4 in a row and lost.
And lost every
four in
last
a row.
One of them. Who was the quarterback? Jim Kelly?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Kelly.
I mean, they had one of – I give them this much. They had one of the best offensive like threats with Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas,
Andre Reed. Oh,
like,
man.
But they just couldn't. They couldn't put it away.
And their defense was a monster. I can't think of some of the names.
Bruce Smith. Cornelius
Bennett.
Steve Tasker. Well, he's a special team.
You were a Buffalo fan because you don't know nothing about sports now.
Once I realized it was really political driven.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm done. Because when you look at the game they lost with the Giants, when they lost against Washington. Like,
oh,
there was
yeah.
so much refereeing in the Washington game, it was blatant that they was cheating for him.
But when they lost to the Cowboys, they just
that
got
was
that.
A fair and square. They just
got their butt handed to them.
That was
all.
A fair and square. Look, they was done by then. Like,
let's be clear. That was a mud stomping that had come.
Didn't they play Dallas twice?
Yes, I believe so.
Back when Dallas was relevant, I said relevant.
See that? You can't get out your mouth.
Back when Dallas
the football guys don't want you to talk that blasphemy.
Back when Dallas was relevant, I remember I used to live for the Dallas San Francisco game because they would always seem to end up in the NFC Championship.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the Super Bowl to me back in the 90s.
And it was always one of the best games.
It was one of the best games.
I was never an NFC fan. Until Vic went to the Eagles, then I was like, oh, that's a good one.
You ain't like him in Atlanta? Atlanta's an NFC.
I did, but I've never liked Atlanta sports.
Oh.
Y'all party too much.
Party too much. Since Atlanta had some good times. When Deion was here, Andre Rison, all them dudes, all them drug head, womenizing athletes. This,
you know, Andre Roger came from the Colts.
He came from the Colts?
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because I think he went to play for Cleveland when he left here. I don't know. He's irrelevant.
He's
that's why he got his,
in Detroit right now.
That's why he got his house burned down. But anyway, we're going to move on. For those listening online, if you want to call in to the show and speak to Ransom Rockwood, myself, or Jameel Harley, the number is 607-203-5368. Make sure you press 1 if you want to talk. We see some of you online now, but you don't have to talk unless you press 1. But anyway, back to Ransom. I know Ransom is you're an interesting fellow. Like your Facebook is politically charged in a lot of things. So I'll let you tell the crowd what Ransom is passionate about. If you don't follow Ransom on Facebook, you should, especially if you hear what he's passionate about, if you have that same passion.
I'm passionate. What am I passionate about? I guess I'm what you would call a social justice warrior.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I guess what that's the term that they've coined now. I'm more. My rants, most of my rants, when you see me going wild on Facebook, stem from a place of oppressed people, you know, either being oppressed or oppressed people taking on the oppression of someone else. Like that's what really gets me riled up. Is either talking about, you know, what's going on kind of out there in the world as far as like a lot of the underlying oppression that maybe we don't really understand is keeping us down. Like an example would be, you want to get me going for, you know, hours at a time, you talk about the minimum wage.
Let's start there.
You know, that's a good one because of the fact that's a place that not only will you have the powers that be that will, you know, get behind that to obviously try to keep that oppression on us, but you'll get those that really are still underneath that same thumb will join in with the people in power.
Right, right.
To try to keep that oppression alive because they don't understand how much they're under that thumb.
Right. So,
you know.
Now, I'll give my thoughts on the minimum wage. Now, I would like for everybody to make a living wage. I'm not saying that. But with understanding a little bit about how things work, you raise the minimum wage, then all of a sudden, people at the top, they're looking for ways to cut money. Now, I heard that this $15 an hour across the board would influence companies to go find the technology to make the sandwich and cook the fries, and then those workers have priced themselves out. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Let me ask you a question. Do you honestly believe in your heart of hearts that McDonald's is not using robots now because of the fact that they're magnanimous or want to keep people employed? Is that the reason why you think McDonald's is keeping...
What I believe in my heart, I believe that it's still cost-effective for them to keep employees in.
Okay.
So, I mean, just think of all industries. Any industry, if they can mechanize you or technologically...
They can automate it.
Yeah, make things automated, get you out. They do it.
They can do it now.
Yeah, I mean...
You know what I'm saying? They could do it now.
They could, but...
I mean, you go to the self-checkout
in
grocery stores all the time. You know, McDonald's could easily go in there. You go in there with a little touchpad, and you put in what your order is, and, you know... It's a little robot back there that makes your sandwich. I mean, it could easily be done now.
Yeah.
The reason that they don't do it is, like you said, a cost-effective
thing. It's going to be millions up front. It's going to be millions up front. They don't want to spend it.
Not just millions up front in, you know, putting them in there, but it's also going to be, you know, the millions in training people on how to maintain them. It's going to be millions in training the people in, operating them because they do require some level of operation. I mean, you can't just walk into a McDonald's and there's nobody working in it. Someone has to be working in there. And then that person who, you know, say you've got some guy in there who his job is to maintain these things.
Right.
Because of the fact that this is new technology, because of the fact that, you know, this is it's new technology and it's something that would be requires some technological experience.
Right, and I'm sure
it would be like their job. They're not going to be getting paid McDonald's wages. That person's not going to get paid McDonald's wages.
Right.
So you raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Is it going to raise overhead for companies? Yeah. Is it going to raise it so much that their next option is, well, we just get a bunch of robots? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The math just doesn't work out that way.
I'm going to say this.
when I first, like, I graduated from college for information technology degree. One of the first classes we took, they said that that's coming. Like, yeah. Everything's going to be automated.
No, it is coming.
So what I'm saying is, what I feel like is this whole thing about unemployment, they raise, like, they hyping people up to raise it because they actually are, like you said, they're implementing that.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. And the more people cry out to say that they want $15 an hour for McDonald's, for instance, that's giving them excuse to be like, well, we don't want to pay that. And when you look at technology over, like, I used to work for Compaq, where we would take a computer that cost the company $10 to manufacture and sell it for no less than $2,500 to $3,000 a pop. And the parts were so cheap. And they was doing it. So right now the technology might be new to where it's expensive.
Yep.
But over time, the price is going to be coming down and down.
And to build on that, it's not a matter of people asking $15 an hour that's going to make them implement that. It's just as it becomes cheaper. That's really all it is. So
15 will speed it up.
15 may speed it up, but it's going to happen regardless.
Yeah.
So shouldn't the people that are working there now make a living wage?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm all for it, but I just me working in technology, that's what I do for a living every day. I see it. So
that.
the people who make the machines, they'll staff the whole place. McDonald's workers will be gone. They'll staff the whole place with their people already trained on the how to use equipment, and that's a done deal. So, and they may just pay them people $15 an hour, but they may only need two or three versus a whole crew of 30.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen, but I just wish that there were a lot of avenues for people who don't have the skills to get something better at McDonald's. They showed up avenues for them to get training and all that good stuff. So if we already putting people in prison and stuff, why ain't we training people to stay out of prison? But
because
that's a whole.
Prison is a big business.
That's a whole.
prison is the prison industrial
complex, right? Right.
For a reason. But I mean, you gotta think that there is big business also in keeping people poor.
Yep. Yep. That's the only way capitalism can work.
Yeah, there's a big business in keeping people poor. You have to artificially keep wages low, because if you have a path for anybody at any time to be able to just, you know, say, okay, I'm going to, you know, get this training and pull myself up by my bootstraps, which don't get me on bootstrapping out of it. But if you do that, then what you do is you make it to where the way capitalism works with supply and demand is completely ineffective at that point, because then if anybody can infiltrate into this place, one, there is no more
1%.
So there's no more like, okay, let's say it was just a matter of all you have to do is apply yourself and you can just get a degree in IT for little more than your effort. Doesn't cost any money.
Right.
Doesn't cost any more than just your effort. Right. Well, then what happens? Matter of fact, I don't even have to talk about what happens on that hypothetical. Let's just look at it from when we all first went to school, when you first went into college, and they were talking about, you know, what job you want. You were like, you want to do IT, and you were looking at how much money you would make coming out of it, right?
Yep.
You know, it was, you know, like, oh, you can make, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90.
Say that dream.
So many people didn't do it. But as those opportunities became more and more, and now everybody and their mama got an IT degree, you know, y'all going out there and finding a job that makes 50 is hard.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So what happens is, as you get the people who have trained for these skills, the demand is no longer there, so the amount that you get paid is no longer there. So that's one of the reasons why I always feel like the argument when you talk about the minimum wage, where they say, well, these people should just go out and get an education. Okay, so all of them get an education. What is it, 11 million low-wage workers go out there and get an education. They all decide they want to be a doctor.
Right.
Now we got 11 million more doctors. And you think doctors are going to be making the hundreds of thousands of dollars a day?
No.
Flood the market with this, and wages drop as a result, because that's how capitalism works.
Unless you start making your own like industries, you know, instead of keep going to the stat quo to be like, give me a job. You know, if you go and learn those skills and then start.
Because there's nothing wrong with having a business of your own, and you make $60,000-$70,000 a year. You can sustain a family, and the fact of the matter, you don't have a boss, it's your business, and you don't have to lean on anybody for anything. There's nothing wrong with a small business.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah. I mean, I am a small business.
Yeah, so a lot of people be like, oh, I got to compete with McDonald's. No, you don't. You can have
Keno's
Ribs. Hey. If I'm pulling 80, yeah, I'm good.
Hey, if my mama made a fast food joint, a mama food, what? McDonald's would go out of business.
But the problem with that, problem that lies with that is to get involved in those. It's one thing to say, you know, I have a skill, I have a certain thing that I'm creative or I'm good at or whatever. It's another thing to say I'm going to turn that into a successful business.
Right. Oh, no doubt.
And a lot of people might say, okay, I know how to make clothes. God knows how to make clothes. You know, I know how to make clothes. So he makes these clothes. And then somebody says, okay, I would pay you for that. Right. So then he sells it to a couple people he knows and, you know, makes a couple extra $100 a month. He's like, oh, I could actually turn this into a business. Turning it into a business where he services a large community requires more than just I know how to make clothes.
Right.
It requires distribution. It requires business acumen. It requires all these different things that they have pretty much closed off the entryways without – you got to go to the people who hold the keys at that point. You know what I'm saying? And that's – like the whole thing is just – It's a rigmarole that
it's a system set up for us not to succeed, for the 1% to stay.
For the 1% to stay to 1%, you know, for the everybody else to stay exactly where they at. And it flourishes under the idea that we all could be there.
Yeah.
You know, on that dream that
the
we
dangling
all could
carrot.
Be there.
The dangling carrot. Well, we're gonna take a small break for now, just so I can reset the camera and all that. If you want to call in and talk on the show, the number is 607-203-5368. Make sure you press 1. We'll be back in a few minutes. You listen to the Keno Tri Show.
Go, 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 shorty. It's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip a Cardi like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give a fuck if that's your birthday. You'll find me in the club. Bottle full of bub, look mommy, I got the ecstasy in the taking drugs. I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug, get in the getting rough. You can find me in the club. Bottle full of bub, look mommy, I got the ecstasy in the taking drugs. I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug, get in the getting rough. When I pull up out front, you see the Benz on dub. When I roll 20 deep, it's 29s in the club. Niggas heard I fuck with Dre, now they wanna show me love. When you sell like Eminem and the hoes, they wanna fuck. Homie ain't nothing changed, hold down, G's up. I see exhibit in the cut, they nigga roll that weed up. Roll that. Watch how I move, you mistake before I play up here. Been hit with a few shells, but I don't walk with a limp. I'm right. In the hood, in the day, they saying 50, you hot. They like me, I want them to love me like they love pop. But holla in New York, the niggas should tell you I'm loco. When the plan is to put the rap game in the trunk, so I'm fully focused, man. My money on my mind, got a meal out the deal, and I'm still in the grind. Now shorty says she feeling my stash. Feeling my flow. A girl from Wooded, they die and they ready to go. Okay. I'm in the club. Bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the AIDS. If you're in the take a drug, I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug. If you're in the getting rough, you can find me in the club. Bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the AIDS. If you're in the take a drug, I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug. If you're in the getting rough. My flow, my show brought me the dough. My car, my clothes, my shoes. Look, nigga, I done came up and I ain't changed. And you should love it way more than you hate it. Nigga, you mad? I thought that you'd be happy I made it. I'm the cat by the bar, toasting to the good life. You that faggot ass nigga trying to pull me back, right? My junk get the bumping in the club, it's on. I'm with my eyes, the bitch, and she's mad, she gone. Hit the roof on fire, let the motherfucker burn. They're talking about money, homie, I ain't concerned. I'ma tell you what bank for me, cause go ahead, switch the style up. Niggas hate to let her make them out the money pile up. Or we can go upside the head with a bottle of bull. Then the way we fucking be. You can find me in the club. Bottle full of bull. Look, mommy, I got the AIDS. If you're in the taking drugs, I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug. If you're in the getting rough, you can find me in the club. Bottle full of bull. Look, mommy, I got the AIDS. If you're in the taking drugs, I'm in the having sex. I ain't in the making love. So come give me a hug. If you're in the getting rough. Ha ha ha. Don't try to act like you don't know where we be, neither, nigga. I'm in the club all the time, nigga. It's a problem, pop off, nigga. See you.
back. I got a little louder. We're back on the Keno Tri Show. We're back from the break. during the break, we brought up the fact Donald Trump. So I thought that'd be an interesting topic. So how you feel about Donald Trump?
Donald Trump is a good businessman.
He had to lean back and take a breath.
Yeah, he's a good businessman. Let me tell you the thing that bothers me, not about Trump. Trump, you know what Trump is? Trump is a reflection of America.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And to me, the thing that pisses me off the most about Trump, or not Trump, but about the topic of Trump, is the fact that the conversation is always about what he said. What he did,
right,
you know, and it's never about the fact that. Do you cuss on this show?
Oh, you know, say what you want. Go ahead.
It's never about the fact that you have half of a political fucking party in this country.
Yep.
That the front runner for president.
Yep.
Can say we're gonna deport all the Mexicans because they're rapists.
And build a wall. Build a big-ass wall.
We're going to beat up black protesters at our rallies.
Yep.
And say that that's okay.
Lives don't matter.
We're going to, you know, stop Muslims from even being in the country, from existing at all, that this can exist, and that an entire half of the political system will be like, yeah, that's all right.
And he's
I'm good.
He's
straight.
The front runner too. He is the front runner.
I'm straight
by a lot of points, right?
Probably so.
I heard like 15 points ahead of the next Republican.
He's got like double the points of like the next guy.
Who is the next guy? Like
It depends on which poll, but it's either Ted Cruz. If it's not Ted Cruz, it is Marco Rubio.
So Ben Carson's done.
Ben Carson's done. They was like, you lying nigga.
The pyramids was built to keep the sand for
grain silos.
Yeah, that's what he thought. With that bullshit.
But you know what? Although I would never vote for Donald Trump, I appreciate him. He is.
Oh no, I appreciate him too because he's pulling the scab right off of this. This wound it ain't. It ain't closed up.
But he has that old America in mind, back when America was good and white. He want to take us back to the 50s.
No, he want to take us back before the 50s.
Report to your nearest plantation if Trump gets
elected. But again, it's not. See, this is the thing. I don't even believe that Trump believed 90% of this shit.
No, he don't.
He doesn't believe 90%. But he says it because he knows that there is an old, racist, hateful, angry part of the electorate that does not get spoken to because it's not, as they like to say, politically correct. It's not politically correct for the Republican or the Democratic nominee to get up there and say, you're mad because there's too many black people and brown people and gay people and, you know, Muslims and whatever that have a voice now, and we needed to go back to where none of these people had voices. They can't say that. So instead, they dog whistle.
Yeah,
instead, you know, they say things that we all know what it means, but, you know, but Trump gets up there and he's like, you know, what you guys going to do, make me not a billionaire? Like, so he get up there and just say it. And he's like, you know, my life is great, whatever. I got my foreign wife. I got my daughter that I want to fuck. Like, I got... He said it.
He did. Yeah, something like that.
He said when he was in an interview, and he said more than once, but he was in an interview once, and he was like, you know, that his daughter was very, like, they was like, oh, your daughter's very pretty. He was like, oh, yeah, my daughter's beautiful, blah, blah. He was like, if I was not married, I would probably be dating her. That he said it as a joke, but that ain't the type of shit you joke.
I don't know any parents
that jokes about dating their daughter.
Say that about their dad. I mean,
and
they
talking about how good his daughter's figure is. And
wow.
Like bonus, right?
Oh, I don't know. I ain't never seen it. If she look anything like them sons, woo! Because they look just like their daddy. Comb over and everything. They came out with that comb over. Oh.
And came out with a toupee.
What the whole political circus? It's a circus.
It's a circus. I mean, no, all of it is a circus. But regardless if it's a circus, you still got to acknowledge the fact that when they get up there, they're performing. The audience doesn't know it. Mm. So it ain't about watching the performance. It's about watching the reaction.
Yeah.
And if you watch this reaction, you're seeing that like there is a contingency of angry old white people that are trying to drag this country.
Yep.
Back to Jim Crow yeah. as fast as possible. They before they die, they want to see a nigga back in chains. That's
and you know what's so funny? If they want to see that, stop doing the nay-nay. Stop doing. I need white people to stop doing the nay-nay. And they take everything from our culture and it's viral. Like, what's the new dance? The dap or something? The dab or whatever. Yeah. Like, they doing the dab now. And I heard that just came out. And Cam Newton gave that away.
What fuels that?
He gave it away.
What fuels that is the fact that we think it's cute.
Like,
if you was to do that, and I'd look like, whack as hell that you just did that. Yeah. Like, if I don't give you no, but they'd be like, look at that, he's so cute.
Yeah, he's so cute. It was a time that we did that. It was a time that black people used to look at white people and be like, no, that's not hot. But somewhere it changed.
Well, me and my homeboy, Tim, shout out Tim, if he listens, yeah. you know. But me and my homeboy Tim, we've actually talked about this before. And we hitched our wagon to the status quo, to where we are,
right?
A long time back. It ain't no turning back for us. It's really not. We already too interweaved. We too enmeshed with white society to just be like, nah, we want all our shit back. Nah, we gave that away a long time ago, and it ain't no coming back from it. I mean, it would be nice to think that we could come back, but and I know it's politically incorrect to say. That to speak ill of MLK in the movement.
I
know it is, but you know, bless their heart.
Yeah.
When they decided what we wanted was integration,
right,
they signed
right,
our death certificate. Right. That was it. That was done.
Well, he even said it. He said that himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once he started to make that turn to be like, nah, me and Malcolm,
and
we need to
get
upset. They're like, you got to go.
Yeah, you got to go.
And then you still got the people in our generation and younger that they don't understand that. That's why it was like this girl. God, and she got upset with me because I broke down the detriment of integration.
Yeah, and Martin Luther King was talking about, I want my 40 acres and a mule. That's what he started talking about, reparations, and that's what really got him killed when he started preaching about reparations. We always hear, I got a dream, but he actually had a pretty long speech about where he talked about how the other cultures were getting their reparations from the Japanese Americans to the Indians and it was a couple of other cultures he was talking about. They were getting farm subsidies and all kind of stuff, land
and
given.
And what do we get?
And we got nothing. And that was going to be the second part of his civil rights movement, was to talk about reparations. But they caught him in Memphis slipping, and here we are now. It's a shame that the greatest speeches we have are done. We're done 50 years ago. Like, when's the last time you heard a prolific speech or anything that moved us or set off a movement? I haven't heard anything. I mean,
it's all a rehash of what we've already heard.
Yeah, yeah. So,
for the most part.
So
because again, when he died, the movement decided, okay, well, we got the right to vote. We
right.
got, you know, Jim Crow
complacency.
Know, laws ended. Yeah. So we're here now. We've arrived, you know, and there's been no movement further from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. There's not been, since that time, there's been no movement to sit there and say, okay, we got these basic rights, but we haven't achieved equality.
Right, right.
You know,
and those rights don't really mean nothing. I mean, your vote don't mean nothing until they get rid of the Electoral College.
I know, right? It ain't going to be just no whoever get the most votes, the electoral.
Your vote in the presidential election don't mean shit.
Yeah.
Your vote in local elections means something.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem is that don't nobody ever do that.
Yeah. We got a caller. We got a caller. Somebody wants to talk. Let's put him on the line. Let's see. Caller from 317, you're live on the Keno Tri Show.
Hey, Keno, this is Daddy-O. How you doing this evening?
Daddy-O.
What's up, Daddy-O?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say a couple of things. I'm not going to elongate it, but I'll say, you know, like Martin Luther King, if I'm a little bit older, probably a bit older than you gentlemen. So Martin Luther King, if you know the whole time period in which the civil rights movement started and it existed, and you knew the climate of it, then you probably would think a little bit differently. Although I understand Martin Luther King to me was a hero, but I think that his direction was misguided. I do believe integration has hurt us a great deal. You know, it's divided us, you know. Like, I think that as time has gone on, and we see, like, I'll give you a good example. Like, in Indianapolis, where I live, there used to be, we used to have drug stores. We used to have theaters. We used to have hardware stores. We used to have all these different things, and now we don't have anything because everybody's going out to these different places that they're now allowed to go. So integration has hurt us. But the thing about Martin Luther King that I always remember is that he was sincere, just like Malcolm. He was sincere. And today, there are very, 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 very few sincere leaders. When it comes about orators, to me, Dr. Umar Johnson comes to mind because Dr. Johnson is a very good orator. He's very passionate. I believe he's sincere, although there's some things that as of late who have come, you know, to come to presence, come to the surface about what's going on with him. But other than that, he's a great orator. I think that the people today, the young people today, the way they've been raised and the way they've been taught, I think is the drawback. Because of integration, it's like I have cousins, the people that I don't see from one end of the year to the other, whereas before integration, we all lived in the same neighborhoods, and you couldn't help but see them. You couldn't help but see Leroy or John or Susie, whoever. You couldn't help but see them because you're in the same neighborhood and you're just going to the same schools and everything. But now, because of that integration, everything, you go for months, maybe even years or whatever, and you don't come in contact with these same people. And that is hurting the community. We no longer have communities, we have neighborhoods. And there's a distinct difference in the two. So until we get back to having real communities, until we get back to the point where as I can look across the street and see you and you can see me and we have some kind of brotherhood, true brotherhood, then it's going to be the way it is because we have definitely, because of integration, we have definitely been divided and we have been conquered. And I'll leave that alone. So
I shame my brother.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to put you back on hold for a minute, Daddy. We're going to speak on that a little bit.
I forgot all about Umar Johnson. I'm glad he mentioned that. Umar Johnson is probably one of the best. I've seen him live before.
Yeah, I want to see Umar. He's supposed to be here soon.
He's coming on the 28th.
Yeah.
And from his lectures that he gives, he says so much stuff that takes you back to the Malcolm X and the Marcus Garveys and the Black Panthers, how they talked about self-efficiency and really dealing with our own issues.
So the problem is how we get people to stop turning up. That's primarily what the culture dictates. Like, go out here, spend your money, treat your woman like a hood rat, buy the biggest car you can't afford. I mean, how do you change that mindset?
I think it takes every individual who understands that to just... Because I can't come and make you do nothing.
Sure can't.
I have to be an example. You know, I have to inspire you to do something, you know. And if nobody's really trying to inspire, like your show is probably inspiring some black kid to,
something. Shout out.
You know, that probably wouldn't have anything else to do. So we have to, as people in the forefront right now to have a platform to say something, we have to inspire something other than the nay-nay and the dab and the turn-up. Real quick, Special K, I got him on Facebook, and he video recorded, he went to his local Chinese restaurant, and there was a mother, that was her restaurant.
Yeah.
She was teaching her child how to run the register.
Yep.
And he says, look at this, the people, you know, you got other nationalities, other cultures teaching their kids from day one how to run a business, how to be a self-efficient, but we teaching our kids how to nay-nay and dab, and what's the little mobile, little... air thing,
and the hoverboard,
stuff that doesn't bring anything back, but it takes away from the community.
Yeah,
but the difference there is, he's going to the Chinese restaurant where they
neighborhood.
It was in his neighborhood where they were given a loan, and they were given a restaurant, and they were given a place where their family could build something. What is the person who's teaching their child to nay-nay? What are they going to do? Take them to, you know, work that government job with them? Like, they can't teach them, well, I'm going to show you how to, you know, write this TPS report. Like, the difference is that a lot of times we aren't given that opportunity to be able to build something that we can then pass on. So we don't have anything but a dab and a nay-nay to give
We actually do.
But
think
what
about
I'm
it.
Is that that's the mindset.
Yeah,
the mindset is we don't. It's a lot easier when you're building something that's yours to be able to kind of self-actualize and say, you know, I got something and I'm worth something beyond this little bit of piece of something that someone gave me. If you can build something from, you know, like even if it was just that loan that you got, that opportunity that you got, but you can build something from that.
Yeah.
And you got a business that you can pass down to your kids, you can pass through your family, then you can, again, pay. You can pass it to the family. You can say, you know, hey, little Susie, come over here. Let me teach you how to do this because this will be yours one day. But if your job is, you know, I work as a nurse or whatever, you can't say, hey, little Susie, come with me to the hospital because this will be yours one day. It won't.
This ain't mine.
this ain't mine.
Well, cool. We're going to take a little break right now. If you want to talk live on the show to us, 607-203-5368, make sure you press 1. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to the Keno Tri Show. Without a dope beat, step two. Think it. It's been a long time. We shouldn't have left you. Without a dope beat, step two. Think it, baby girl. What would you do to get to me? What would you say to have your way? Would you give up or try again? If I hesitate to let you in, know what to be yourself or play a role. Tell all the boys I keep it low. If I say no, would you turn away or play me off, or would you stay up? Oh, just don't worry. Dust yourself off and try again. You can dust it off and try again. To me, but I can't let it go so easily. Not till I see what this could be eternity or just a week. We know our chemistry is off the chain. It's perfect now, but will it change? This ain't a yes, this ain't a no. Just do your thing, we'll see how it goes. Try again. We are back here on the Keno Trice Show.
And always too loud.
I know, always too loud. You know, we got, hey, man, I got to produce and host the show. It's a lot going on. Now that we're back with Ransom, one of the things I wanted to bring up was Ransom is a photographer by trade. And one of the things, I watch his social media, and one of the things that caught my eye is when the Baltimore protests were going on, and I saw you put some very nice pictures of the protests, of the people out in the streets. Tell us a little bit about that whole experience. So did you go right after the Mike Brown shooting, or?
So I had me and a friend of mine, my friend Tim, I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
We were, you know, we both are kind of, you know, these social justice warriors or whatever. And, you know, when the Mike Brown thing happened, you know, that wasn't a you know, we couldn't go to, that was what, Cleveland? That was in
St. Louis.
We couldn't, you know, just pick up and go.
Right.
To, you know, and then when, you know, the Eric Garner thing happened, you know, couldn't just pick up and go to New York or whatever. And we always talked about how, you know, we would like to be involved or whatever.
Right.
And then you have Freddie Gray.
Yeah, Freddie Gray.
Freddie Gray. That happened in Baltimore. That's my backyard.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sitting there talking on the phone with him. I was like, bruh, I was like, we got to put our money where our mouth is. We can't talk and not go. You know, I can't be on social media saying, you know, blah, 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 this about injustice, blah, 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 this, and I'm not there, you
right.
know. I need to be boots on the ground. And he was like, yeah. So we, you know, jumped in the car, headed up to Baltimore. And this was like, I think, maybe 2 or 3 days after, you know, it turned into a riot.
Right.
Right. right. And, you know, I actually didn't even, I told Mia, and I told my sister I was going. I did not tell my mother because I knew she was going to be.
Nah, my baby. Be like that one mother that was on the news smacking her kid in the head. Psh, get out of here.
Yeah, I knew that she was going to be like, yeah. She didn't want me to go. You know, but I went up there, and let me tell you this much. Never, ever in your life let anybody, if you ever hear specifically a black man come out of his mouth telling you that our sisters don't support us,
right, right.
When we was taking pictures of this march, we're watching like a good maybe 5,000,
yeah.
five maybe more.
Okay. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, maybe a good 5,000 people, maybe more or whatever, just marching, right?
Right.
And as I'm looking down this sea of faces, maybe a third of them are black women.
Wow.
I'm talking about, this is a sea of faces of black women, black men, white women,
right.
Hispanic, you know, and of this, a third of them are black women. Like, they were so thick, so deep,
right.
you know.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't even say that black men were, that there were a third of black men there. You know, everything else was just kind of muddled together.
Right.
But black women were there, thick and on the front lines. And, I mean, it was a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, I would
beautiful.
Expect that because these are black men. They have a mother. So I'm sure a lot of the mothers have went through the heartache or known somebody in their
yeah,
family.
But you know, you know, we and by we, I don't necessarily mean you or me. You
yeah.
know, but you know, we quick to throw ours under the bus, and
yeah.
we're quick to say that a black woman don't support us.
Right.
You know,
right.
we quick to say that, you know, some kind of way they don't have our back.
Right.
And
right.
I'm telling you, when I look in these movements, ain't nothing but black women.
Ain't Shout out to the sisters out there. Shout out to the sisters.
Yeah.
Now I heard with Baltimore and St. Louis that a lot of times the police are the antagonists there to kind of get the foolishness started. Did you see that while you were there in Baltimore?
I did not see them specifically, and like I didn't see them, you know, jumping in anybody's face
yeah.
or doing anything. What I saw was a police presence was wholly unnecessary. The
right.
presence itself was antagonistic.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you see a bunch of people peacefully protesting, marching down the street, you know, like, no, there's no fussing, no fighting. You know, I wouldn't even say that it was aggressive,
right.
you know. I mean, quite frankly, my opinion, should have been.
Yes,
should have been. That, I mean,
violence comes with change. I mean, if you look at any nation that's had any civil unrest or running under
there's never been a changing of any major political change that has not come
with violence. Yeah,
but beyond that, I know when me and Tim were walking back to the car and we finally left, because at that point, batteries on the phones had died, batteries on the cameras had died,
Right.
Like, everything was dead. So it was like, all right, we got to head back, On the way back, actually took a picture. I don't know if I posted it on there, but we see this just phalanx of police. Like, it had to have been 200-300 cops just in a line.
Wow.
And it's like, there's literally no reason for y'all to be this thick, this deep, right here. Nothing is happening here. Like,
and you said it was on the way out.
This is on our way. This is when we're leaving. When we're coming, basically, what happened was this, that the march initially started downtown, and the police had everybody surrounded at that point, but it was going to go towards where the whole incident happened. So it was going to go through Baltimore, right? Okay. So they were going through the neighborhoods. They were going through the hoods, right? Basically, the moment, though, everybody left downtown, left, where all the white folks at.
Yeah.
They set up a phalanx to make sure that nobody come back.
Come back, yeah. Mm-hmm. They was down there to protect.
They was like, the cameras are here now. We're going to let y'all have your little thing.
Yeah.
But
you ain't coming back.
You ain't coming back here.
You know, it was said that they the ones that started that, really. Like, it was some Oreo fans that was leaving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That kind of started that off.
I wasn't there. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, I'm gonna tell you this. I've never been somebody that was completely trustworthy of the police. But the last 2-3 years, honestly, you could tell me anything about the police and I'll believe it.
Yeah.
At this point, you could tell me that a policeman ate a baby in front of you and I would believe.
That's
it.
What they do on lunch. Next to them donuts, they will eat a baby.
And I would believe it. And you could call me dumb or stupid for that, but to me that's no more idiotic than y'all believing that these police officers are always fearing for their life.
Right. Yeah.
And then y'all believing these police officers always felt threatened, always thought they saw a gun.
Yeah.
Always thought it's no more stupid. It is no more stupid.
Especially when you got cats that's and wheelchairs is getting
shot. Yeah, getting shot, slapped up. I felt threatened in the wheelchair. Yeah, I saw you there was that, one. Yeah, yeah. Got on a wheelchair. They shot him up.
You see that one guy that had a knife and they just unloaded on him?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like there?
Well, it was like 8 cops.
Yeah. Like, what happened to shooting him in the leg?
Yeah, you can't even have a Fitbit on your arm. I was working out, get shot up. Oh, he reached for the Fitbit.
I see the biceps. He'll get him. If you that scary, you should be
I thought he was James Bond. Yeah, one of them, fancy wrists.
Yeah, it's like, what you going to training for if you're afraid of everything?
But they're not afraid of everything. No. They're afraid of us.
Yeah.
Right.
I grew up in a neighborhood that was middle class, close to low income, and we had some knuckleheads, and we had crooked cops in the neighborhood. We had a cop. We called him Mama Dez. I mean, he come to the park. People didn't know him. He'd smoke weed with you, then arrest you. Like, it was crazy.
Hey, this weed was whack.
Get in the car.
Give me this Reggie? What?
Yeah, yeah, but I mean,
license registration.
I mean, they human, and they're subject to mess up. But, it has to be some kind of...
There needs to be some checks and some balances.
Some checks and some balances. And I think it is a terrible idea. People may disagree. When people come home from the military, you done sent them overseas to kill all kind of people for any kind of reason. Then you bring them back and put them in your police force. I mean, the police originally was called peace officers. These ain't peace officers. These are trained military people, and you letting them loose on the people. What you think they're supposed to? And a lot of them have PTSD and all kind of mental issues.
I mean, the biggest problem was the removal of community policing.
Like, yeah.
Like, there was a time when cops walked a beat. There was a time when you had police officers that you knew who a police officer was. It's like, okay, the cop that's here is, that's Officer Jones. He's always here. If something goes wrong, let me call Officer Jones.
He's
let me not call
racist,
the police. Huh?
I say he still could have been racist.
No, he still could have been racist, but at the same time, it's hard to be racist. It's hard to have that knee-jerk reaction that makes a lot of these incidents happen. When
you actually have
somebody I sit down with every day.
I look you in the face. I know who you are. I might sit there and still think you a nigga, but I know who you are.
Yeah.
Mm. You know what I'm saying? I know who you are. I know that you're not reaching for a gun. I think you're a nigga, but I know that you're not violent. You know?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I know you don't have nothing there, Kino.
You know? Nah. Like that's just...
It's that a key.
It's the reality.
Stabbing.
When we remove community policing, then we set it up to where the cops could only possibly think of certain neighborhoods as being war zones.
Yeah.
It's like, to them, it's about arrest rates. It's about walking in and walking out alive. Walking in alive, walking out alive. That's it. And I'm not even making no excuses, because, again, you can tell me anything about these cops and I believe it. At this point, because they're liars, you know, and everything that surrounds them are liars. Like, they're liars, their unions are liars, their departments are liars, their mayor's offices are liars.
Yeah. But, you know, that hasn't never changed, though.
No, it hasn't changed, but
that has always been the...
But now we have the surveillance state.
Yeah,
and
now
the
we
surveillance
have
the state works against them just as much as it works against us.
Yeah. But, you know, as long as the people don't do nothing about it, it's never going to change.
And as long as it's just affecting us, the people ain't going to do nothing about it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, you got a point there.
Shout out to the good law officers out there.
I
got to give a shout out.
No, let's do some good things.
Let's be clear. There is not a such thing as a good law enforcement officer. I'm on record. Ransom Rockwood said there is not a such thing as a good cop.
Elaborate.
The police. Period. Point blank, without exception. And I say this, because if you are such a good fucking cop, then when Tamir Rice gets gunned down in the street, why aren't you standing up and saying, this is wrong?
True.
When, you know, kids are getting shot, walking away from the cops 16 times, unloaded, and then they go and erase footage from a Burger King, and they bury the tape for a year, why aren't you stepping up and saying this is wrong?
Now,
being a good cop does not mean you don't kill Negroes. Being a good cop means you stand up for injustice. So when something wrong happens, even if it's other cops, you stand up against it. And guess what? Cops don't do that. And I know why they don't do it. I understand exactly why they don't do it. Number one reason they don't do it is because if they stand up against other cops, they're in danger.
They're in danger.
Which
exactly.
tells you how fucked up cops are.
Yeah, that's true.
What was that guy, the L.A., they looked like LL Cool J, that they sent drones to kill him?
Oh, yeah. I forgot his name.
His last name was Gart.
I forgot where they chased him to the woods.
Yeah,
and
you're talking about
up.
The dude that wrote the manifesto.
Yeah, the manifesto. But
a good and dead cop.
You heard about the situation in Alabama where they found out that the police have been planting drugs and guns on kids, people for years. Well, it was another cop that turned him in, and it was actually a white cop who turned him in. So he's not a good cop?
He's a good cop.
Yeah, he's a good cop, right?
He's a good cop. Now, how long did he let people go to jail?
Yeah, I mean, that I didn't hear that part of the story. He could have been new and saw some stuff and be like, and then they.
I mean, look. If he fresh out of the academy and snitched the moment he, good cop.
I'm gonna do some research just for you.
I don't believe that's what happened. I don't believe it either.
According to Ransom, you can only be a good cop if you're within the 90 days of probation period and you snitch.
If you
do what you're supposed to be doing, ethic wise.
I mean,
you're right.
Who polices the police?
Right, you're right.
Themselves. They be like, we're going to investigate ourselves. We'll get back to
all these cameras.
Right. If there were good cops, there wouldn't be a thin blue wall.
Yeah. There's a brotherhood. And I mean, it's hard to break it. I mean,
here's the thing. If there are cops who are horrible cops.
Yeah.
Right? And then there are cops who aren't murderers. Like, it's being a good cop to me is like saying you're a good Klans member. It's like I'm a good white supremacist. It's like I don't believe that black people are bad. I just believe, like, I ain't never burned a cross. Like, you're right, but you stick up for an organization.
Right.
Like, even being a member of this organization makes you a bad person.
So we need police. We need some form of
You do
law
need police. You
so,
do need police. I'm not, look.
So if there's a black man who grew up in a neighborhood and said, you know what, I want to be a cop. I always want to be a cop. And he actually gets a job with that police force, stays in the neighborhood. He knows everybody, walks the beat, helps young people, and do everything he can do to uplift the community. Is he still a bad cop just because he's a cop?
Because, look, let me tell you. You cannot be a good cop and a good person. Like, being a good cop
means you have to arrest some people when you don't want to.
I don't give a shit. Look, if you're a criminal, then get arrested.
Turn up. Arrested.
Like, if you're a criminal, you should get arrested. If you're a criminal, you should pay the price.
Right, right.
Okay, I am not saying that you are a bad cop because you uphold laws. That does not make you a bad cop. But I'm saying that being a good police officer and being a good cop are not the same thing. And they're mutually exclusive. You can't be one and be the other. Because if you're a good police officer, if you do your job,
mm-hmm.
right, if you say, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to uphold the law and blah, 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 and I'm going to, you know, stick up for people who can't stick up for themselves, and I'm going to fight injustice wherever I see it, even if it's within my own ranks, guess what? You can't then be a good cop, because you being this good police officer means they will run you out. There's no way you're going to be able to do both. You're going to have to ignore some corruption. You're going to have to turn a blind eye. You're going to have to act like you didn't see it on certain times for you to keep your job.
True. We got to do that on regular jobs.
So you can't do both.
Yeah.
You can't. It's impossible. So if you're saying to me, like, well, what do we do? At the current moment, it ain't shit that we can do. But, in a perfect world, you need to completely... From root and branch, you need to tear this shit down. Tear down the policing system and build it back up.
Yes, I mean, if we're going to turn the situation around, people need to police their own neighborhood. So that's kind of discouraging. Like, would you influence a child to become a cop? Like, hey, if you become a cop, be a cop for the right reasons. You know, take care of your community. I mean, we need people policing us who look like us. So.
Well, you know, when you follow Dr. Umar Johnson, Claude Anderson, a couple of other guys that are kind of underground right now, they speak about the community coming together. And, you know, Claude Anderson, you start with your economical infrastructure.
Yeah.
And from that, then you build your local government.
Yeah, local government.
That includes your police, and then you get your politics in it. So it can happen, but we have to, it goes back to what we said on break. We got to use that $1.some-odd trillion that we give to...
Give to the church. Get
white
a Krefler.
Supremacy,
give it
to
Krefler for them planes.
You know, that money that we give away right there, we need to incorporate that back into the community and start building within. So, I mean, you know, there's a place in New York I was in, and it's the Jewish community.
Yeah,
they got their own police officer.
Yeah, they got everything. They got everything. We're the only community that's not self-sufficient. And
by design.
Yeah, I own some property that's kind of in neighborhood that's mostly black. And it breaks my heart when I go there, because sometimes I go over there and I need gas in my car. I can go to the right, leaving the neighborhood, and I can go to the left. There's a gas station a mile to the right, a mile to the left. No matter whatever gas station you go to, it's poverty and despair at each one, and people loitering, hanging out, and begging for money. But then when you go in, the people who own the gas stations are not us. They taking the money out of the community. They not taking care of the community. The gas station look like crap. I would not put my debit card in the gas machine. It looks so bad. So what do we do to turn that around? It's like we had this Stockholm syndrome where we don't want to spend with one another for some reason. Like, if I walk in the store and see a black face, I'm not saying me personally, I'm going to spend, but other people, we don't like to spend it with one another, or we give each other attitude. Oh, y'all price is too high. Y'all know y'all need to be ashamed of y'allself, but y'all go in and give $100 for them blunts.
That's another thing we was talking off the air. We have to, the people that are aware, have to start putting heat on the people that are benefiting. And I'm not talking about the outside entities. I'm talking about the Creflo dollar.
Yeah.
You know,
put pressure on him, yeah.
You know, and I don't want to just point out him, but everybody that's in our community that's making money hand over fist, but they're not spreading that. And I'm not saying go out and give $100 to people, because that $100 is going to be blown up.
No, teach
like
a man
to
fish.
You teach them
how to fish
and
how
to eat for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
So you got these big churches and these, I hate to keep going, well, I don't hate to do it, but I keep going, you know, that big elaborate institutions within the community, and they're not teaching people how to.
It's hard not to look at the church, because when you go in these low income communities, what's the most successful looking structure in the community? Yeah. It's the church. The church got all the new stuff.
Inside of New Jack City.
I was in Texas, and I rode through the hood, and there was a church in Texas. It was pretty nice, probably green grass. They had barbed wire fence around it. So what does that say to me as somebody who lives in the community? I mean, like, you're in my community, but you don't trust me. And this is a church.
I'm not welcome in the place that's supposed to be a sanctuary.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a sanctuary, but you got barbed wire fence.
You get these gold piano keys I got up
here. Which means that you're not in tune with the community, which means that you're not out there, because no matter how impoverished the situation is, black people, if you get to know them, we respect one another, and some of the people in the community probably helped take care of the church. You just didn't give them the chance, like, put this barbed wire up. So unless you come dropping in the collection plate, it makes me kind of feel like I'm not welcome. So that's what I'm saying. It's hard not to look at the church.
And in those institutions, with the amount of money that they get weekly, let alone annually, you can create companies that generate money that'll start to – it's almost like the ecosystem we was talking about.
Yeah, when you take one thing out of the ecosystem, it changes the whole landscape.
Yeah.
And I say that with the church. Like, in DeKalb County alone, I can name, and I'm not going to name, 5 mega churches in DeKalb County, which I know are million-dollar entities and structures and congregations. There should be no reason that I should go into any community in DeKalb County that's primarily black. And not at least half the businesses I walk in are black-owned. But you got these churches funneling millions of dollars out of these communities. Pastor riding big,
his boyfriend riding big, wife, girlfriend riding big.
So, I mean, I know you didn't want to get into the church thing, but I mean, that's just one of them things. It's hard not to look at that. I mean,
especially when you talk about the economical disparity in our community.
That's the biggest companies in the black community is the church.
And then who's teaching?
And it's the biggest political presence.
Yeah, the biggest political. Yeah.
And I mean, and that's the reason why I didn't want to get into the church. Because the reason I wanted, because that is our biggest downfall. Yeah. We have wrapped white Jesus in the church in every single thing we do. You know, as much as politics is a game, at least white folks know not to enmesh their religion with their politics. They know
they do
that two
too.
Games.
Yeah.
They know.
When I used to go to church, I went to this one church. It was ran by a white minister, and he was telling the people.
No. Here's what I mean. If there's some type of political dealings that need to be done, if the mayor needs to go talk to somebody
in the church,
he ain't finna go to, you know, Reverend Paul's church and go talk to him to try to get, you know, the community on his side. He's gonna go talk to some business owners.
Yeah.
He's gonna go talk to some, you know, company managers. He's gonna talk to whatever and be like, I need you to get your employees, I need you to get your underlings, people, you know, on board with this thing that I got going on. You want to get every single time something happens in the black community. What do we got? A bunch of fucking reverends and ministers and
give it to them.
Every single time, you know, let's go find out what the black ministers think. Who gives a shit what the black ministers
going
think?
To see Trump?
Yeah. You know, we got 100 black ministers going to see Trump, and
for what?
Like, okay, that's nice. I ain't never in my life listened to what a black minister said and been like, well, it changes my mind. I had my mind made up about this, but Reverend such and such just told me.
Therefore,
there's so many of us that Reverend such and such tells them something, and they do say, well, therefore, I need to change my mind on it.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm not just talking about, you know, the money that we put in the church, where that's, you know, you guys covered that. That is a huge problem. But it's the fact that we let the church's opinion and the church's direction move everything that we do.
Yeah.
Everything. As long as we're doing that, and this is the religion that the white man gave us to keep us subservient.
Yeah.
How do we, if everything that we have is enmeshed with this church that was given to us to keep us subservient, how is there any expectation that we move anywhere?
Amen. Amen. It's a good time to take a break.
Give it to me.
It's a good time to take a break. Before we wrap it up, you want to call in and talk to Ransom, myself, or Jamil, number 607-203-5368. We'll be back in a few minutes. Listen to the Keno Tri Show.
Bringing to the folk, Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope. Ready to make an entrance, go back on up, cause you know we're about to rip shit up. Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Ain't nothing but a G-thang, baby. Too low, death niggas, so we're crazy. Death Row is a label that pays, man. Unfadable, so please don't try to fake it. Back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'ma let them understand from a young G's perspective. And before me dig on a bitch, I have to find a contraceptive. You never know, she could be earning her man and learning her man, and at the same time burning her man. Now you know I ain't with that shit, Lieutenant. Ain't no pussy good enough to get burned while I'm offended. And that's realer than real deal, holy feel. And now you hookers and hoes know how I feel. Well, if it's good enough to get broke off a proper chunk, I take a small piece of some of that funky stuff. It's like this and like that and like this, Santa. It's like that and like this and like that, Anna. It's like this and like that and like this, Santa. Drake creep to the mic like a fan.
Well, I'm peeping and I'm creeping and I'm creeping, but I damn near got caught, cause my beeper kept beeping. Now it's time for me to make my impression felt. So sit back, relax, and strap on your seatbelt. You've never been on a ride like this before, with a producer who can rap and control the maestro. At the same time with the dope rhyme that I kick, you know and I know I flow some old funky shit. So add to my collection, this election symbolizes dope. Take a toast but don't choke. If you do, you have no clue of what me and my homie Snoop's all came to do.
It's like this and like that and like this, Santa. It's like that and like this and like that, Santa. It's like this, then who gives a fuck about those? So just chill to the next episode. On that ass, what a hell of a gangster lean. Getting funky on the mic like an old batch of collard greens. It's the capital S O S, I'm fresh and double O P D O double G Y D O double G. You see, showing much flex when it's time to wreck a mic. Pimping hoes and clocking a grip like my name was Dolomite. Yeah, and it don't quit. I think they in the mood for some motherfucking G shit.
Hell yeah.
So Drake,
what up,
gotta give them what they want.
What's that, G?
We gotta break them off something.
Hell yeah.
And it's gotta be pumping.
City of Compton. Where it takes place, so a national attention. Mobbing like a motherfucker, but I ain't lynching. Dropping the funky shit that's making the sucker niggas mumble. When I'm on the mic, it's like a cookie, they all crumble. Try to get close, then your ass will get smacked. My motherfucking homie, Doggy Dogg, has got my back. Never let me slip, cause if I slip, then I'm slipping. But if I got my Nina, then you know I'm straight tripping. And I'ma continue to put the rap down, put the Mac down. And if your bitches talk shit, I have to put the smack down. Yeah, and you don't stop. I told you I'm just like a clock when I tick and I sock. But I'm never off, always on till the break of dawn. See you when PTO in and the city they call Long Beach. Putting the shit together like my nigga D.O.C. No one can do it better
like this, that, and this, and it's like that, and like this, and like that, and it's like this.
Then who gives a fuck about those?
So just chill to the next episode.
Yes, we are back on the Keno Tri Show.
Always too loud going on.
Oh,
why did your levels change?
Because I turned up the music during the break so we can listen. See, y'all want to hear some Dr. Dre? I want to hear some Dr. Dre.
Some more magical levels online, over there.
You know, I want to go old school. But we're back with Ransom Rockwood. While you got me off kilter here. Last thing before we wrap up, I wanted to talk about your business as a photographer. Now, how did you get in photography? That's not something people aspire to do usually. That they know they can make money.
Apparently, everybody aspires to do it nowadays. You know,
oh yeah, yeah, selfies.
Goddamn photographer.
I started photography through a woman. Through a woman. Now, it's I mean, I've always been fairly artistic. I've always been fairly artistic, like, you know, draw and paint, sculpt, all that coming up.
Right.
And photography was one of those things that I kind of always looked at it sideways, like, yeah, I'd like to get into that, but, you know, when we was coming up, it was film.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was it was an expensive proposition. You weren't just going to, you know, go get you a professional-grade camera and, you know, learn how to do photography going through roll after roll after roll of film. And, you know, if you didn't have means, which right. I didn't, you know. So this is one of those things I was like, yeah, I'd be interested, but no. But anyway, so I started dating this one woman, and she woke up one day and decided she wanted to be a model.
Right.
Decided. So she took some pictures and whatnot, and, you know, I was trying to be the supportive boyfriend, so I was basically like, all right, well, whatever you need from me, you know, just let me know, you know. And she ended up, like, entering a Smooth magazine. They had a contest, an online contest to okay. be on the – she entered it and won it, and, you know, then career kind of took off a little bit or whatever, and she was working with – this these two photographers, good guys, I actually still know them, still talk to them.
Right.
We're working with these two photographers doing a website, and eventually, I guess they had like a difference of ways of where she wanted to go with the site. Like, not like a, you know, they were doing anything shady, just they right. had different ideas for
right.
what she wanted to
right.
do. And I was like, well, who's going to take your pictures? And she was like, I don't know. I was like, well, let's just buy a camera. I'll figure it out.
Right.
So I started taking pictures, was pretty good at it, and then people started asking her who takes your pictures, and she started referring them to me, and they started paying me, and I was like, oh, I'm pretty good at this.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
so,
there you go.
So how did you know what to charge people? That'd be my biggest thing in starting a business. Like, what do you
well,
charge
being people? That being that, you know, with her doing the modeling, she knew a lot of photographers, and,
okay.
you know, they knew of me through her, so, you know, I asked questions. It was like,
Are photographers forthcoming with that? Like, is that like a competitive market to be in? Like, no, nah,
when they don't think
you're
a threat, yeah. When they don't think you're a threat, yeah. And I think in the beginning they didn't find me all that threatening. So in the beginning they were like,
now I got these pictures, bitch. I'm selling them out to Trump. No. So, I mean, is it something that when you get to a certain level, you get like, oh, I got to buy more equipment. I need a better camera. How do you grow with photography? Do you use your old camera till you can't no more, or how does
you,
that work?
You use your gear until you outgrow your gear.
And how do you know that?
You'll know. I mean, no, it's one of those things. You'll know. When you outgrow your gear, you'll know. You'll know when you are trying to do something and you know how to do it, but you know that your gear won't let you do it.
Okay.
That's how you've outgrown your gear. You're like, okay, I want to do this. And I know if I just did this, this, that, and the third, then it will work. But this camera doesn't allow me to do that.
Right. Right.
You know.
Are there?
Like, for example, right? Let's say that I wanted to do a high-speed product photography shot, right? Where I'm having water. I'm trying to freeze the action of water or something like that, right? And I wanted to use certain color temperature on the like for a specific product. I needed a specific color temperature on the lights, right?
Right.
So I have these flashes, and these flashes can sync, can only sync upwards of 1/250th of a second. But I need to freeze the water at 1/1000th of a second.
Okay.
Right. Then I know that my gear does not keep up with the limitations of the shot that I need to do. You know,
right. Okay.
I know how to do the shot.
Okay.
But the gear won't do it. So I need to buy better gear.
Is there ever a situation where you would rent gear for?
Yeah, that's where if that one spit, like, say I need to do that shot, but this is probably the only time I'm going to do this shot all year.
Yeah.
It don't make no sense for me to buy.
Right, right. Okay, okay.
Have it sitting in your closet, right. Dusty.
Yeah, but if, you know, like in that type of instance, if, you know, a client comes to me and says, this is what I want, right?
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, I already know that I, you know, don't have the gear to pull this off or whatever, then I would, when I invoice them, I'm going to invoice them with the rental.
With the rental. Okay.
You know, included. So.
Okay, I'm learning a little bit about cameras. I ain't that savvy yet, but that's cool, man. That's cool. And, I mean, so what is your biggest marketing strategy? Is it word of mouth, social media? What avenues do you use?
At this point, it's been word of mouth mainly. It started out with social media. Started out where I was doing a whole lot of social media, and then I got to a point to where my name was known well enough that it got passed around to people. You know, I would like to graduate from word of mouth to an agent that does, does the heavy lifting for me.
Oh, okay. So photographers can have agents.
Oh, yeah. The best photographers have agents that help them make millions of dollars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all the agents out there watching, my man's dope. My man's dope. So you'll be doing a shoot. I know when Mia's been around you, because she hits the social media with all the new dope pictures.
The scene with the colorful pictures.
She's taking pictures with ducks and unicorns. All right. But cool, man. Man, thanks for coming on the show, man.
If y'all want to book a shoot.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you want to book a shoot, then you can hit me at 443-508-8066. And you can check out my work on either my 500 pixels, that's 500px.com/rohphotos, that's RHOPHOTOS. Or you can go to my Instagram, so that's just Instagram rohphotos, or Ransom J Photos. Ransom J Photos is probably the more work-friendly stuff.
Okay.
Keep in mind, I started out and my main market was Playboy models, straight stunting, King magazine, like that.
So no objection here.
Would like more to see what my headshot game is like, the type of stuff that you would probably want, go to my Ransom J photo.
Yeah, if you want to do birthday parties for children,
then you don't like your children.
Well, cool. This wraps it up, man. Thanks for the people who listen online. Thanks for the people who listen every week and been following me. Trice everywhere. You can find Jamil Harley at Jamil Harley. Like the motorcycle.
They got the point. I don't even have to say
Like the motorcycle on everything. Jamil just put out a real dope video called Queens. Check it out. It's on social media at Jamil Harley.
Queens and Jamil Harley.
Jamil Harley. You shall see it. And until next time, I want everybody to have a great and delicious week. Until next time, we'll see you later. Peace.
Delicious.
Hey, yo, man, you remember that shit Easy did a while back? Motherfucker said it wasn't going to work.
Word. That old crazy shit.
Yeah, the stupid shit, man.
Dope.
Hey, yo, Easy. Hey, man, why don't you come off the piano for a minute, man, and bust this crazy shit.
Woke up quick at about noon. Just thought that I had to be in Compton soon. I got to get drunk before the day begins, before my mother starts bitching about my friends. About to go and damn near went blind. Young niggas at the pad throwing up gang signs. Ran in the house and grabbed my clip with the Mac-10 on the side of my hip. Bailed outside and pointed my weapon. Just as I thought, the fools kept stepping. Jumped in the foe, hit the juice on my ride. I got front and back and side to side. Then I let the Alpine play. Bumping new shit by NWA. It was gangster at the top of the list. Then I played my old shit. It went something like this. Cruising down the street in my 6'4". Jocking the bitches. Slapping the hoes. Went to the park to get the scoop. Knuckleheads out there, cold shooting some hoops. A car pulls up, who can it be? A fresh El Camino rolling Kilo G. He rolled down his window and he started to say, it's all about making that GTA. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your car. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit.
Say what?
Donald B's in the place to give me the pace. You say my man JD is on free base. The boy JD was a friend of mine till I caught him in my car trying to steal an Alpine. Facing up the streets to call a truce. The silly motherfucker pulls out a deuce. Little did he know I had a loaded 12 gauge. One sucker dead, LA Times front page. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your car. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit. I wanna get ill, so I went to a spot where my homeboys chill. The fellas out there making that dollar, I pulled up in my 6'4" Impala. They greet me with a 40 and I start drinking, and from the 8-ball my breath starts sticking. Left with my girl to rock that body. Before I left, I hit the Bacardi. Went to a house to get her out of the past. Dumb hoe said something that made me mad. She said something that couldn't believe, so I grabbed a stupid bitch by a nappy ass weed. Started talking shit, wouldn't you know? Reached back like a pimp, slapped the hoe. My father jumped up and he started to shout, so I threw a right across and knocked his old ass out. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your car. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit. I'm rolling hard now under control, then wrapped the 6-4 around a telephone pole. I looked at my car and I said, oh brother, I throw it in the gutter and go buy another. Walking home and I see the G ride. Now cat is driving, kilo on the side. As they busted a U, they got pulled over. An undercover cop in a dark green Nova. Cat got beat for resisting arrest. He socked a pig in the head for ripping his guest. Now G is caught for doing the crime. Fourth offense on the boy, he'll do some time. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your cart. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit. I went to get them out, but there was no bail. The fella saw the ride in the county jail. 2 days later in municipal court, POG on trial, cold cut of foot. Stepping up the court, said the judge, on a 6-year sentence, my man didn't budge. Bailiff came over to turn him in. Kilo G looked up and gave a grin. He yelled, I'm fire. Then came Susie. The bitch came in with a submachine Uzi. Police shot the bitch, but didn't hurt her. Both upstate for attempted murder. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your car. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit. Yeah, I kicked a little ass, but that was a blast in the grass, motherfucker.